This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
The unabridged millennial here, Mason Vera Payne, and thank you for tuning in. If you're a comic book fan or someone who's a collector, you don't want to miss this one. Today, joining me is COO of Metropolis Collectibles, Vincent Zerzolo, to talk about the state of the comic book economy. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself, Vincent?
Well, I started buying and selling comic books when I was about 15, 16 years old. I grew up in Rockaway Beach, Queens, in New York City. And in school, I became known as the comic book kid. Anybody who had a collection or whose relative had a collection, they would call me up and I would go buy it. And I did it all through high school and college. And then when I graduated from college, I decided I wanted to do this full-time. And I actually started out selling comic books on the streets of Manhattan. And grew my business from there, started a mail-order business, and also in the course of 1 year, brokered warehouses of comic books, the tune of probably over a million comic books. And built my business up, and in 1999, merged companies with my partner, Stephen Fischler, and we are the co-owners of the world's largest dealership for vintage comic books called Metropolis Collectibles, metropoliscomics.com. And we also, in 2007, started ComicConnect.com, the premier online auction site for vintage comics and original comic art. And actually, this week, we're going to have an amazing auction, so it's pretty exciting.
Wow. I mean, that's a hell of a jump. Usually, a lot of people, when they are into comic books and they start their own business, they usually start off selling their own comic books, and it's like in a brick and mortar. And it usually just stops right there. I mean, you took it a lot further, a warehouse? I mean, how did that work?
Well, the warehouse is what I would do. Back in the early 90s, there were comic books were incredibly popular. I mean, you had books selling in the millions every month. And they were packaging comic books for stores like Walmarts and things like that. And I would find the warehouses of comics, and I would flip them to the packagers. So I never actually had to put them in a warehouse myself. I just brought them from one warehouse to the other. But, you know, on deals like that, you move 100,000 books, you make two pennies a book. That's $2,000, you know. So it added up, and I would do a few deals like that over the course of a month, my conventions in New York City, and then selling on the streets of Manhattan. And before you know it, I was building a business.
You know, when you went through your comic books, how did you know you found a rare one?
Well, you know, you develop skills over years of looking at comic books and knowing what people like. And there's also an Overstreet price guide, which has been around for over 45 years, to the values of different comic books. Of course, you need to know how to grade them. That's very important. But even nowadays, over the last 17 years, there's a third-party grading from CGC. They're the biggest grading company in the world. And even if you don't know how to grade a comic book, you can send your comic book for a fee. You know, watching the market, being in touch with what people are asking you for on a daily basis, and being able to utilize the price guide and your grading skills, you can ascertain the value of a comic book.
You know, when I'm looking at comic books, I notice a lot of times people will self-grade it, and they'll consider it to be very fine. Should I be wary of people who want to self-grade?
The vast majority of our comic books, we sell them raw, so self-graded or raw comic books. And the reason that's the case is because, first of all, graded comic books take up a lot of room. So just to give you an idea, on an average magazine-sized box or short box, you can fit about 150 raw comic books in it, or 35 graded, CGC-graded comic books in it. So it takes up a lot of room. Also, there are a lot of books that doesn't pay to actually get them graded because they're not worth enough yet. Or you just think there are certain attributes in the comic book that you'd want somebody to be able to see and hold in their hands. So for these reasons, we do sell a ton of books raw. And we stand behind the grades in this respect. We grade the comic books what we think they are, by the Overstreet standards, and if anything ever comes back restored, which that is something that can happen from time to time, there are people who restore comic books, and for the most part, my team and I can spot most of that, but on occasion, they do get by. And if you spot that within the first 30 days, we give you 100% money back guaranteed, and after 30 days, we give you 100% credit. So we don't see people get beat by that. And once again, it's very, very minimal, small amount of times where we will miss a restored comic book, but occasionally it does happen. That's one of the things that's great about CGC, though, for more expensive comic books, is they have a person who specifically all he does is look for restoration on comic books. And that does help. And it helps to add a certain level of security and confidence to people who are buying graded comic books and raw comic books.
I thought restoring was like a good thing to do. That's not a good thing then?
Well, it is a good thing, but you have to disclose it and price accordingly. So a restored comic book is worth less than an unrestored comic book. So let's say you have a Superman number one VG condition, 4.0 condition, unrestored could be worth over $200,000. A restored copy is probably worth around $20,000.
Wow.
So you have to be able to explain that to a client and tell them what kind of restoration's been done to it, and then let them make a decision based on that. And we are very proud to say that we do our very, very best. Our team is very, very skilled at determining and finding restoration.
When it comes to comic books and their prices, what about signatures? Do signatures like hurt it, or does it increase in value?
So one of the great things that's so cool about the comic market is there are so many different ways to collect. And one of the things people do love are signed comic books. CGC does something called the Signature Series comic book, where they have a witness watching an artist or writer sign the comic book, and then they can certify that it was actually an authentic signature, and they encapsulate it in a yellow holder. Usually a regular comic book will be in a blue holder, a restored comic book in a purple holder, and a qualified comic book, which is another conversation for another interview, in a green one. But for the vast majority, we're talking about Signature Series books. Those are in yellow holders. And one of the artists, creators, found has helped to increase the value of signed comic books is Stan Lee. He is the co-creator of almost every major Marvel superhero from the 1960s, Spider-Man, Avengers, X-Men, Fantastic Four, Hulk, and the list goes on and on. Signature Series books can increase the value, and how much, it all depends on the book, how nice the signature is, where it is on the book, and how much somebody's willing to pay for it. So I've seen, you know, comic books with Stan Lee's signature go for $1,000 more than the equivalent comic without it, and then I've seen, you know, $30, $40, $50. Other artists that are really popular that people get signatures by are like artists like Frank Miller, who created Sin City and 300 and was the creator behind Dark Knight Returns. And then there are thousands upon thousands of other artists and writers and creators that sign books, and those books become more highly collectible or collected by a certain grouping of collectors who really like that stuff.
Now, there are different ages in comic books, you know, Golden Age, Bronze Age, Modern Age. Which one do you think is probably where most of the money lies?
You know, that's a great question. There is a comic book for every budget and a budget for every comic book. and the reason I say it like that is because you can, if you're looking to vintage comic books or even modern comic books as a place to make money, you can make money on modern comic books. It is possible. It's something I see happen all the time. So where the most money is going to be the Golden Age, because those are the most expensive books. But Silver Age, Golden Age are basically comic books from the 30s to the 40s, early 50s, then the mid 50s through 1970 are the Silver Age comic books, and then 70 to, many people will have different ideas, but 70 to 78 or 80 are kind of Bronze Age, and then Copper Age is the 1980s, and so on and so forth. But basically, you can find places to make money in every part of the market. It's just a matter of doing your research, understanding the fluctuations in the market. And for instance, with modern comic books, there are a lot of variant covers. So they'll have the regular cover that comes out, and then for every, let's say, 25 that a comic store orders, the distributor will ship them a special variant cover by a different artist. And then those become more valuable. The things you have to watch on those is they can have a short lifespan, 6 months to a year, where they're really red hot, and then they peter off when everybody's gotten their copies. So you have to be aware of that type of thing.
You know, I've recently learned that they actually have comic books now online. So when you subscribe, you can just read it online. Do you think that affects pricing?
I've been asked that question many times, and I'll quote Stan Lee on this one. He basically compared it to boobs, and he said, "Their boobs are great to look at in the internet, but nothing beats holding them in your hands." That's Stan Lee, not me. So the idea here is, I think it's fantastic that people are reading comic books on the internet and on their iPads digitally. I think that's great. Some people were very concerned about it at first, but my concept and my idea is, anything that gets someone to read a comic book is a good thing, because we can take it from there. Somebody starts reading Spider-Man online, the next thing they might say is, you know what, I want to buy a piece of Spider-Man art, or I want to buy the comic book itself that this came from, and then they call us up. So exposing as many people as humanly possible to comic books as an art form, as a collectible, as an investment, is a great thing.
You know, when I was a kid, I collected a lot of comic books, and, you know, I thank my father for that, because every paycheck we would go and spend $50 worth of comic books, and it was like twice a week.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I was daddy's little girl right there. So I was lucky enough, though, because I was like, well, I would buy one comic book to read and another one that I would just seal away, because I didn't want to get any oils on the cover. I was very, I don't know what it was, a little 12-year-old doing this, but I'm glad my father indulged me. But when it comes to protecting your comic books, I actually read recently that you should be changing out your backboards. Is that true?
You definitely should change your backboards, but you can buy acid-free backboards, bags, and Mylars, which do last a considerable amount of time. I think every 2, 3, 4 years you should be changing them out. But definitely go with acid-free, because you don't want any of the acids from a backboard damaging your comic book.
You know, I was a little confused about that, because it says acid-free, so I kind of assume that it's going to, you know, be acid-free forever. Is it coming from the comic book itself? Is it like eating itself out?
Sometimes the comic books can... So you have to understand that a comic book cover is made from different paper than the interior of a comic book, and sometimes the acids, I guess, for lack of a better term, or certain properties of one can affect the other, and so you do want to be careful with that. The way you can do that is, there are these micro pages that they put in between the front cover and the interior, and the back cover and the interior on books. That does help to slow down that situation. But if you store your comic books in a cool, dark place, and acid-free backboards and Mylars, you should be okay.
Going back to my dad, he likes to go to flea markets a lot, and he's always like calling me up like, "Hey, Mason, they have all these comic books. They're 25 cents per, you know, like you need to come out here." And I'm like, "Dad, you know, I don't think I should come out there, but you know, sometimes I will just for him, 'cause he likes to push it. And I think it's adorable." But you know, a lot of people do see this where it's like, okay, comic books are 25 cents a pop. And it's like, wait, why aren't these considered collectibles like other ones?
Well, they are collectible. You know, collectible just means that somebody wants to collect and read them. The reason that they might be selling them for that little is because they're relatively common, new, or in low-grade condition. So sometimes you can buy a collection or a warehouse of books for 10 cents a piece, so you sell them for 25 cents a piece, and you're happy, and you move them out that way. There's a whole different mindset when it comes to buying those. These are for people who just want to read and look at comic books, and that's totally cool. We want everybody from every type of walk of life with every type of budget to be enjoying comic books. In my opinion, it's the greatest American art form.
When it comes to comic books, and like, let's say it's an artist or an illustrator, do you think if they're popular today, like their older stuff from independent comics, like publishers, would they be worth more too?
Well, a lot of times you'll see that comic book artists get their start in an independent comic book. And what we've seen more and more of are guys like, let's say, like Sam Keith, who was famous for the Max. He got his start in an indie book, and I think it was a Primer number 4. And you're starting to see those selling for $150, $200. So, yeah, we definitely see that all the time.
So you can actually, the artists themselves can make a comic book popular.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There are certain times they'll bring a very famous comic book artist onto a slow series, and it'll pick up immediately, and then hopefully the writing is good as well, so it retains the readership afterwards. But yes, that's definitely a situation that does happen.
Where can people go to find pricing for their old comic books? I know, like, when I was collecting, there was Wizard Magazine, and in the back they used to have all the pricing for certain comics, but it's gone now. Where do you go to figure out the price?
So there's several different things you can do. You can go to my websites, MetropolisComics.com and ComicConnect.com, and you could read and look at tons and tons of books and values. If you want to get a price guide, the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide is the book to get. You can get it at any bookstore or online. I think it's on the 46th edition right now. Then if you want to go online and look at comic book pricing for CGC-graded comic books, you can go to GPAnalysis.com. That's G as in goat, P as in Paul, analysis.com. And that's a pay site. You have to join it and subscribe. But the information there is extremely valuable.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I love talking about comics, and I love that you know so much about it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on. And if you ever want me back on, I'm here ready to go.
Thank you, Vincent, for joining me to talk about the state of comic book collecting. Make sure you visit MetropolisComics.com. That's MetropolisComics.com. You can follow Vincent on Twitter at Vincent Cerzullo. That's all one word. That's VincentZurzolo.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.